Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's considering going into politics. It's Richard Herring. Thank you. Hello. Series 23. We've been recommissioned. Hello, my fine friends, and welcome to another edition of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Don't have to think of an acronym. Different thing, it's good. Though I was talking to Ukrainian comedian Vladimir Zelensky from off of Paddington 2 in the Ukrainian Strictly Come Dancing and that routine where he plays a piano with his penis. Not sure what he's been up to recently, but he calls it Rahalastapas. I don't know. Have you seen that? Have you seen him playing a piano with his penis? See if Boris Johnson had done that. I mean, he probably has, to be fair. Yeah, World War III might be started by the time this goes out. It's good to, you know, we thought everything was going back to normal. I thought it was going to be the Roaring Twenties, but instead we've gone back to the 1910s, but with additional Nazis. It's kind of nice to combine the two. World War I plus World War II equals World War III. It's good. It works nicely. We're all laughing about it here, quite quietly. We're all having fun. Look, there's some exciting developments. The people who backed the Kickstarter, we're being live streamed, and thank you to the people who backed the Kickstarter to make that happen. You'll get a mug, some of you, that says I backed the Kickstarter campaign, and all I got was this hot, lousy mug. But there's what I've got. I'm the host of Rahalastapa. Come on. Rahalastapa. Oh, terrible. And all I got is this lousy mug. And now the guests are getting, I was a guest on. And all I got is this lousy mug. We've got a bit of cash to splash, haven't we? It's all going well. So do look out for that. Thank you for everyone who backed it. And I should thank the people who backed it to get a special mention in this introduction. And I said I'd say anything I wanted about them, and most of them haven't said anything. John Lynch,
back to thank you, John. He said, can you please ask my wife to be nice to me? And I would say to his wife, look, I know you could have done better. I know you must look at him every day, think, I could have done better than this. Why did I commit to John Lynch? But he's okay. You could have done worse. So he's a nice guy, so give him a break. There's also back to buy Sophie Titwank. She doesn't want anything else said about how old are you? 21. Oh, you're 21? Well, you look so young. That's all right, 21's fun. I can say titwank to you, that's fine. In fact, I'm going to repeatedly throughout the show. Not this show. This show is going to be very clean. Thank you to Mark McDonald as well. Mark McDonald. Don't want anything said about them. Mark McDonald. Mart. Not a name, is it? Mart. Good. Thank you to everyone. It's good, isn't it, just be rude about people who've given lots of money to us to do this. Yes, look, I was wondering, because of the whole situation in Ukraine, where a comedian has gone on to be quite a successful politician, done quite well, hasn't he? And he's been amazing this last week, incredibly motivational and inspiring. And I wonder whether we should do that in the UK as well, replace the parliament with a parliament of actual fools rather than the fools we've got in at the moment. I'm going to stand. If I can get like 400 comedians, that's all we need, 400 comedians to stand and win, then we'll be the main party in control. Would you vote for 400 comedians? Yeah, okay. My plan is to modernise Parliament. This isn't even a joke. Build a purpose-built Parliament in the middle of the United Kingdom, right in the middle, with flats attached where the MPs can stay if they need to. Then rent out the Palace of Westminster and sell off Buckingham Palace. To pay for it, bring in proportional representation, I think we can do it. So if you're with me, this is sign up now. That's just my first political spit. I don't think I'm quite as inspiring as the other guy. Look, we're going to crack on. I should say, if you want, there are some programmes for the show on the bars. If you would like to grab a programme, they're free. Please take one if you haven't got one already. We're making a collection for Scope. You can put some money in for Scope if you like, but you don't have to. That's more for the people here than the people at home, but you can donate at home as well. Look, let's crack on. My guest this week is probably best known for his portrayal of Ronnie Hislop in Doctors. That's why we're here tonight. What else has he done? He was so good in that. What else? Has he been up to anything else? Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome living legend. It's Paul Chuckle, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Paul Chuckle. Welcome. Sit down. There's a microphone.
Hello.
It's Paul Chuckle. Can't believe it. Can't believe you're here. It's so lovely to have you here, Paul.
I tell you what, this is lovely, coming on stage and sitting in a nice armchair like this. You never have this at home, you know. we have deck chairs.
But deck chairs, yeah. It's nice that there's comedy thing, just so you can have a comedy routine at home where you try to put up a chair and fall into the middle of it. Do you remember? You've done quite a lot of acting, and I think you're a very fine actor. I did not catch you in Doctors.
You didn't catch Doctors? Well, it's on in the afternoon. You were still asleep. I loved it, playing that Ronnie Hislop.
Yeah.
I was in a old folks' home.
Right.
It's obviously nobody here has saw it at all.
I don't think. Did anyone see Doctors with Pauline?
No. It's very, very popular show. I know that. Yeah. I was in a love triangle. I was supposed to be. What's funny about that? Yeah, I was in a love triangle with Heidi High.
Sue Pollard.
No, Sue Pollard, yes. Yeah. That wasn't Heidi High, though.
Okay.
No, or was it? It might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who was just it? Hello, campers.
Oh, Ruth Maddock.
Ruth Maddock. Yeah, they were my two. Okay. Sue Pollard and Ruth Maddock were my two love.
Oh, wow. I'm going to look this up.
It wasn't serious. I'm sorry. My wife's in the audience. So I had to, yeah. There was nothing serious about it, but it was good fun. Great fun. Yeah.
Good. Well, we will check that out. That sounds amazing. Look, there's so much to talk to you about, Paul. I've had such fun, and it didn't feel like work, but my job today was to watch things from your career, including Chuckle Vision, of course. Imagine watching Chuckle Vision and that being your job. Imagine that.
I say, I'm so sad. I watch it myself on YouTube.
But what an amazing career. I thought you started in 67, talking about stage, you started in 63.
1963, Edinburgh Palladium with Dorothy Squires.
Right.
There's nobody in here who'll remember Dorothy Squires. But yeah, she was a very famous singer at the time. And she was top of the bill. I was 15 years old, Barry was 18. And she came off stage and she was effing and blinding. At 15, I had never heard a girl swear, let alone a woman swear. And she was, every word in the book she was coming out with about the musical director, I get that into my dressing room now because he's a... Over and over, it was awful, awful to watch. It was.
Well, that's
she's not with us anymore, so she can't have a go at me about that.
But you've actually stayed very clean, haven't you? Throughout your, you never went blue.
We did. We were never blue. No.
Must have been a temptation when you're playing the working men's clubs.
All the working men's clubs, yeah. I think the bluest we ever got was we saw Barbara Castle at the airport.
Right.
Asked her where she was going. She said, "I'm going to Bangkok." And she said, "You might as well. You banned everything else in the country." So that was the bluest we ever got.
it was a showbiz family, right? So your dad was a famous comedian, worked in the music halls. I did.
Yeah, dad was a comic. He Gene Patton, G-E-N-E, which Huey Green years later called "We Want to Hear Her." It was my dad, you know. He actually got banned from radio. He did something like 395 radio broadcasts,
right,
before TV, before the war. And he got banned for 2 years for finishing a joke with, and it was as smooth as a baby's bottom.
Right.
And he was banned for 2 years for TV. Can you imagine that? What you get on TV now? You know?
Yeah,
amazing. But yeah. Luckily for him, it was 1939 and he had 6 years of war, so there was no radio for him to do anyway. He was away fighting.
Right, there's something good came from World War II. I mean, if there's World War III, I'm going to take that as the reason my career's gone. Yes. a nuclear war probably will have an effect on most people's career, but let's see. So it's a big family, six kids, and a lot of you went. Did all of you go into show business? Or
no, not all.
Four of you?
Jimmy and Brian, the eldest two, the Patton brothers, they did a comedy double act for years. My sister went to be a dancer, but in those days they used to get £2 a week and they had to pay digs. And she did 2 years of it touring round, and then the last week she ever did was in London, somewhere in London, and... digs were £2.10.
Right.
For the younger ones, that's £2.50. But and she was only getting £2, so she had to ring home for money to be sent down to pay for her digs. And she thought, this is ridiculous. You know, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
And she packed it in.
Okay.
Which we thought about many times as well. We thought, what are we doing with our lives? No, but Colin was a motor mechanic. He never wanted to go in the business. And then, of course, Barry... He went straight in at 15. He worked with an act called the Singing Scholars, and they toured Europe. They did all sorts of shows. And then Freddie Starr was in the act, same act.
Right.
And Freddie got sacked after 3 months because he's a nutcase. He really was. He was absolutely mental. Brilliant comic. So funny. I mean, everybody knows that Freddie, fabulous comic. But he was just over the top.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be, you know, he wouldn't do what he was told to do.
Right.
And he got the sack from that. But then I was never going to join the business because I think you well know, because we've talked about it, I was always going to be a footballer.
Yeah.
That's all I ever wanted to do. I dreamed about it. I slept about it. I played for all the school teams. We had a fabulous team. I got in Rotherham Boys when I was 14 and got a terrible injury and... That was my career over. But our team, eight of the team, would have been nine with me, all turned professional. And just an ordinary school team.
It's amazing, from a school team and never lost a match.
We never lost a match from 11 to 14, 15. Didn't lose a game at all. There's only one that became a bit of a name, was my very best mate, Phil Cliff, who lived two doors away. From the age of three, we were playing football in the garden all the time. And he ended up playing for Sheffield United in the First Division.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was a brilliant player, he really was. At 18, he got in the first team at Sheffield because Gil Rees, who was a brilliant professional international for Wales, he was injured and he got in at 18. Yeah. And in those days, in the 60s, 18-year-olds just didn't play in first teams in the top division. And he scored the winner at Tottenham 1-0 in a midweek game. I think they were playing West Ham, and he scored one and made two as a winger. And then on the Saturday, they beat somebody else and he scored the goal again. And all the newspapers, the News of the World and all that, were all saying, what a wonder boy, Cliff, and all that. I think I've still got something somewhere saying, my mate, wonder boy, Cliff, you know, swine. But the Monday he was called in by the gaffer, and he told him that, he said, look, Gil's fit again, and on Saturday he's going to be back in the team and you're going to be back in the reserves, but don't worry, I'll give you a chance. You'll get your chance again. You know, we'll use you, no problem. And I said to him, I said, well, I'd go in the morning and slap a transfer on the desk, you know, and say, I want to move. You know, if you're going to drop me again.
Yeah.
You know, surely you can find another position. But they didn't do that in the 60s. You know, a left winger was covered by a left winger. And if the left winger, the first team, came back in, he was out, rather than saying, well, we'll put you in at, you know, number 10, or we'll put you in at number 4. No, they didn't do that then. So 3 more years, he never played again for Sheffield United. Was transferred to Chesterfield, who to this day is a big name there. Philip Cliff at Chesterfield is a name that's gone down a legend forever. Yeah. 27, his career was going down. He went to Worksop Town. Have you ever heard of Worksop Town? You have, yeah, good. Yeah, he played for them for 2 or 3 years and then he packed it in and then moved to Asda in Rotherham as a shelf stacker. And that was how he finished up his rest of his life.
Well, it's a strange thing, isn't it? And you could easily have been you could have been a footballer yourself, and that would have been and when you think about how long your career's been as an entertainer and how successful that's been, and to just keep working for that length of time is incredible. But you could have gone into football.
I mean,
you're saying backstage you could have gone into football and actually then done the Chuckle Brothers because you would have been about the right age.
I could have done both. Yeah. I was 39 coming up 40 when we did the first series of Chuckle Vision. So I'd have been packing in the football at 34. I could have still done both careers, you know. That would have been magic. That would have been a magic life.
But do you still regret the football not coming? Is it still... It seems like a...
Well, yeah, because, yeah. I mean... I've loved football all my life, right from a kid. You know, me and Phil Cliff, yeah. We used to, from the age of 8, we used to go down every single Saturday to Millmore to watch Rotherham play. The home team, and the following week we'd watch the reserves. And just every single week, every Saturday we went to the matches.
Yeah.
Just we lived football, you know. That's all I ever wanted. And I was quite a few months of really upset when I got injured, I tell you. But I'm over that now. I could have made a star.
Yeah. Rotherham might still call you up to be in the team. I tell you what, York City might call you up to be in the team, who I support. York, you'd probably get into the
Who's
York
that?
Squad. York City, they're pretty good, pretty good team.
Are they?
I think I might get in the team for York City.
Have you heard of that, lads? No. See, no. Somebody heard Worksop, but they didn't know York.
No, they were once quite good.
Yeah,
but
yeah, they're a good team. They're good lads. Good lads.
So yeah, so you basically got into Opportunity Knocks and then New Faces. So those were the sort of talent shows of the.
They were. Yeah, they're like Britain's Got Talent today.
Yeah. And so you did pretty well in both of those.
Yeah, Hughie Green, 1967 Up Knocks. We won that for 1 week, and then back into obscurity for a couple of months. You know, the clubs said, "Oh yeah, we'll have them."
Yeah.
The Harmon Brothers. Yeah, we saw them on Up Knocks. Yeah, we'll have the clubs. And then they forget who you are again, cause unless you're on every single week on the TV, nobody knows you.
Yeah.
And then we slogged around for a few years, and then 1974, we actually won New Faces.
Right.
And that was great. That you're a star, superstar, mommy, and it was a wonderful feeling. The warmth of walking down, and everybody's clapping you. Even the other acts are all clapping you, and you go forward, and they go, "We've done it." No, we hadn't. No, we went into pantomime. In Bournemouth with Arthur Askey and Dickie Henderson.
Wow.
Two great names, two fabulous comics. The Arthur, well, there's a story for you. Arthur, at Bournemouth Pavilion, there's like, must be 30 steps, concrete steps from the dressing rooms below the stage up to the stage level. And he used to go up for his opening entrance, and then he wouldn't come down till the interval. He'd sit on a chair at the top of the stairs and wait. Me and Barry used to say, you know, why doesn't he, he's not on for 15 minutes. Why didn't he go back to his dressing room? You know, why sit up there? And that was it. We never asked him, nothing. And then Barry's last pantomime, 2018 in Southampton, we were sitting at the side of the stage on these chairs waiting for our next entrance. And we looked at each other and we both started to laugh. And I said, do you remember him, Arthur?
Yes.
Arthur asked us to sit up there rather than walk all the way down the stairs and all the way back up. We found it much easier to sit at the side of the stage on some chairs rather than going back.
Sure.
I mean, time moves on and you become the same person, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, you all do.
But it's that's, I think, what's so amazing is that you... And also, I think, because your act sort of... It's a little bit of a throwback to the music hall times, right? There's a lot of sort of silent comedy in there and the silent film stuff. And so it's sort of the... Given that you had that long career on TV doing that stuff, it's sort of the almost the last example of that sort of comedy on TV. So your career stretches almost longer than your actual career because it's a throwback to something that existed before that doesn't really exist anymore. And you worked with all those greats...
Yeah, it is. I mean, we'd been in the business like 23 years or so when we got our first break, proper break, which was obviously Chuckle Vision was the big one. And we brought all those years of, we'd done everything. We've done ice shows, we've done aqua shows, we've done circus, we've done, you name it, we'd done it. And we thought, when we get our own series there, we're not going to let it go. You know, we're going to just put 100% into it. And we didn't aim it at kids. We aimed it at family right from the start. It was for mums, dads, grannies, granddads, kids, everything. Never did anything that was rude. Never touched toilets, for instance. We never actually touched electric plugs or turning lights on. Nothing like that. It was all down to earth.
Yeah.
Mums and dads, let the kids watch it. It's fine. Watch it yourself. And... I think it paid off.
But I think, again, in those days, it feels like you served your apprenticeship. You did, though. I mean, even Morecambe and Wise did years and years of clubs and, you know, and they had success and then they went back and they went back and forth. And you learnt your trade in those clubs.
Exactly, yeah.
And then when you got your moment, then you had your moment. But you were... as you say, you worked with Charlie Caroli in the circus, which...
Old Charlie.
Yeah.
I mean, we know young Charlie is still around.
Yeah.
He's a good mate of mine. But old Charlie was the funniest man we've ever worked with. He was unbelievably funny at the Tower Circus at Blackpool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we did this routine where he was like the stage manager, old thing, you know, he's a brown smock and a cup of tea in his hand. And he was arguing with the ringmaster at first. And then he goes off and then me and Barry come on to do a song, Singing in the Rain. And we said, Maestro, boom. And singing in the rain, just sing. And we're dancing about and then stops. Hang on, stop. Where's the stage manager? And then Charlie had come back on with his brown coat and his mug of tea. And I'd say, you know, where's the rain? What rain? I said, we're singing in the rain. You know, we're supposed to have rain. You've seen Gene Kelly with the Dancing in the Rain. You need all that. Where is it? Nobody told me. Well, I want it. I want it now. Just a minute, hang on. And he gives Barry the mug of tea and said, you don't talk to me like that, blah, blah, blah. And while he's doing that, Barry's having a sup of the tea and he does a slow double take. It was brilliant. Double takes from Charlie Caroli. We learnt a lot from him, really do. Was absolutely superb. And then he'd go, you like my tea? Oh, very nice. You want my tea? And it was, obviously, it was over his head and all that.
Yeah.
And then, it was brilliant. But the actual routine, when he said, you want water, we'll get you water. And we walked off and said, we're not coming back until we've got it. And they brought this big ladder on, huge A-frame ladder. And his feed, the guy, you know, I don't even remember, old Jimmy.
Yeah.
He had a real face. It was like a gurney in face all the time, right. You know. He never spoke, but he looked so funny. And they had him on the A-frame with a bucket of water up on the top of the ladder. And then he calls us back and we come in. Is this it? Yeah, that's it. Right. And he said, right, we'll start. Okay, there's your rain. So we called, "Maestro, please, we're singing," and we danced across the ring like that. And he's all, so they had to come down the ladder, move the A-frame across to where we were now singing again. And as soon as he got up to the top of the ladder, we danced the other way again. So we stopped. Oh, stop. But where's the rain? He said, "Well, rain, we're trying to do it." And there was arguing about it again. And I said, "Look, all we need is water. We need water." "Oh, you need water," Charlie had gone. He said, "Yeah, so, right, you got it." So they were saying, "Maestro, please." And they came on with loads of buckets of water, throwing it all over us. Charlie came out with a hose pipe and he's spraying it all over us. And I don't know if you know Blackpool Tower Circus, the ring sinks. And there's water underneath it. All the water comes up. Right. So we're dancing and it's going up our ankles, up to our knees. And we're still dancing. It's up to our thighs. And we're going, "Hang on, that's too much water." Because the sinks, ring's singing. It was so funny.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
And the beauty thing about was the old feed guy, he was so miserable. He hated water. We don't think he ever took a bath in his life. And he used to help us out. And this one night we said, "Right, he's going in." And as he's helping us out, we pulled him in. And he went head first. And then I've never seen anybody bounce out the water so quick in my life. He was up and out again. And old Charlie was killing himself. But what fabulous stories he had as well. Yeah. Fabulous stories he used to tell us. Yeah.
Well, I remember it. That's one of my early TV memories is Charlie Caroli. So, yeah.
He was great. Yeah. He really was.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But you can see I think like rewatching Chuckle Vision, there's so much work has gone into it, and it's exactly that. It's the reactions, it's all the timing of it, and obviously you've developed this amazing, between the two of you, you've got this amazing relationship because it's lifelong as well. It's not just the time you worked together; it's your entire life together.
Exactly as I was saying to you earlier, I'm terrible at reading. I still am today. All the scripts and things I had to learn. It was awful trying to read them because I'm not dyslexic or anything, I'm just lazy. I was really lazy because we used to go to bed at night and he'd read me a story rather than reading a book, before you sleep, and then "I'm tired now, sleep." But he'd read the story to me, cowboy things, all sorts of books he'd read, and I'd fall asleep. So I think it's his fault.
But it is, it's instinctive because of all that time you spent together, but the craft in it is amazing. And I think, I think like even in, you might think, with Chuckle Brothers, it's just a silly kids show, but you put so much work into making that, and the professionalism of it is extraordinary, I think.
It was fabulous. I really loved every minute of filming Chuckle Vision. We had the same crew almost from the start to the finish because all of them, we had so much fun. They all wanted to come back the following year and they were all freelance.
Yeah.
So we had the same camera crew, same lighting, same sound, same makeup, you name it. They were all there every year. And the only ones that changed were the runners.
Right.
Because they didn't like to work for 100 quid a week.
And then they ended up running the channels probably.
Exactly. Now they're in charge of Channel 5. Yeah.
They probably cancelled the show after.
This is only apple juice, by the way.
You had big guest stars on that show as well. You had big names on there.
We did. Harry Hill.
Yeah,
Harry on there. Yeah, Roy Castle did his very last TV show was Chucklevision.
Wow.
Yeah, I was trying to get Barry into the Guinness Book of Records and he was getting fed up because everything he tried, it was absolutely rubbish. It ended up the end of the show that he was he got into the Guinness Book of Records for the most attempts to get into the Guinness Book of Records. But he was a lovely fella, Roy.
Yeah.
And we knew him when we were kids because he was a good friend. He was actually in the Dead End Kids with, I think it was either with Brian or Jimmy.
Right.
You know, when they were only 15, 16.
Right.
So they were friends for years, and they used to come to our house, you know, when we were tiny. So we'd known him for years.
Yeah, I mean, he was incredible. I saw someone on Twitter put a clip of him when he was tap dancing and playing all kinds of percussion instruments, but Shep went nuts.
Yeah.
And started jumping up at him.
Yeah.
And he doing this really complicated routine and the dog jumping up and he kind of incorporated it and carried on doing this incredible dance.
You brought something up there, I'll tell you. One Red Nose Day, me and Barry swapped with the presenters for Blue Peter.
Right.
And they did a bit of Chucklevision and we presented Blue Peter.
Okay.
And I sat down and the dog sat here. And I sat down like that, bit me ankle. I said, "What's it?" And they said, "Oh, I should have told you. It does that to everybody. It doesn't like people. It's a horrible dog." Honestly, I mean, all the kids in the country love it. Say, "Oh, what a beautiful dog! It's a swine. It grabbed it. Horrible thing."
Yeah, okay.
I don't know why they kept it on. You know, they should have got another. I mean, one dog looks the same as the other, doesn't it?
Well, that was a Petra, I suppose. It died, didn't you? The Petra, one of the first dogs.
Mm.
They introduced it to the kids, and then the dog died, and so they just replaced it with another dog. That looked the same.
Are you allowed to say that?
I think so. I think people know that.
Mind you, we did that with our dog. Oh, wow. Well, we got this puppy, and Nicholas, our number two son, he was about 10, 11.
Right.
And he wanted a dog, so we got this little puppy, a little black Labrador, and it was cute. It was but it was a little swine. It would not sit still. It was here, there, everywhere. It was tearing things up. And it was only like 7 or 8 weeks old. And we said, we can't live with this. We had it about 3 or 4 days. So we took it back, or the wife took it back, and they said, look, have you got another one that's more a bit quieter because it's mental? And they said, oh, no problem, yeah. And they gave this other one, which was Mordu, which was a beautiful dog. And he was gorgeous. And Nick came home from school and was in it. And he's playing with it. And he comes and said, there's something wrong with the dog. He said, he won't play anymore. We never told him till he was about 30. He thought it was the same dog, but it just quietened down a bit.
I'm glad you took the dog back because I thought for a minute you were going to kill the dog. This is going to end his career. This is the end of the career. The live streaming, there's no way out of this. I mean, you're telling me about it because it's such a slapstick show and so much. You know, I was watching the one in the supermarket where you're all in foam and knocking over cans.
I was wondering,
you know, if you ever got hurt, and you were telling me backstage that you never did.
Well, as I say, never did. Not badly.
No.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, I ran into a big pyramid of cans.
Yeah.
On that, split my nose right across the top.
Okay.
So that's the only time I did. But Barry, he was so unlucky on that. 3 times he had really bad accidents.
Right.
In it. You know, which obviously you're not going to publicise. You're not going to say, oh, by the way, Barry hurt himself doing this. You know, there was one where it was one of my ideas, obviously. We got this skip, and I said, you hang on to that rope, you know, and I'll put the stuff in the skip. And we had the rope going up round a lamppost and back down to the skip. Well, I'm throwing stuff into the skip and it's getting heavier and heavier, and he's pulling like this, and suddenly it starts going down the hill and it's pulling him up. And the guys holding the skip were supposed to stop it when he got up to the lamppost, and they didn't. And the bull rope went right round the back of his hand, up against the lamppost, and he's going, and he's screaming with pain. It wouldn't go. He'd locked it. He'd stopped it moving by it wrapped round his hand. And it ripped all the skin off the back of his hand. He had to go to hospital, obviously, have it bandaged and different stuff. And that was number one.
Right. But it's happening to Barry Chuckle, so it's still funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Barry Chuckle.
It's
okay.
No, then he, and I was telling you earlier, he always turned straight to me. He didn't shout anybody else from the crew. He always shout me. you know, because we were so close. And what he thought I was going to do with that skip, I don't know. Then the next one, we had this this contraption built up with a water pressure with a cannon, built up on a big build thing. I don't even remember what we were firing at, but it was when they turned the water pressure on, he was supposed to be holding it and guiding it. And when they turned the water pressure on before he opened the shooting thing, it's, you know, the power of the water against the thing, it broke off, smacked him right in the mouth. Luckily, it didn't break any teeth or anything, but he had a huge bruise around here. And again, he turned around, "Is it bleeding, Paul?" He went, you know, poor chuff. And then the third one, we were doing a haunted house thing. And we had the beautiful old house. It was in Scarborough, and it'd been a girls' school. It'd been an old folks' home, all sorts over the years, and it was been empty for a couple of years. And we were using it for a haunted. And there was these two big gargoyles either side of the staircase at the bottom, and between shots, Barry's sitting there, looking at his script, ready for the next shot. They're setting everything up. And suddenly one of these gargoyles, for no reason, fell over straight on his head. Bang. Again, hospital. He wasn't badly hurt, but in case he got concussion or anything, he'd got a slight cut on his head. But I mean, I never got anything. Well, I did. I got a cut across my nose.
With some cans. Yeah. It's like the universe knew that it was Barry Chocolin. I mean, a gargoyle falling on it. It's a shame you didn't have a camera.
I know,
on it.
It should have been there. It should have been there. I think the producer, Martin, didn't like the idea of it being publicised.
Probably.
He's in charge, and Barry Chocolin's got hit again.
But. I mean, that because the characters are so strong and you're so identifiable because the look is... I presume you can't really hide the look too much even if you want to. So if you're out in the real...
Do you think it's a bit vain? Do you think I should shave this off and have my hair done differently?
I kind of want to ask you about that, but I'll leave that for the minute. But when you were involved in a motorcycle accident in Greece, like, were you, in the Greek islands?
I did. Now, I'll tell you the truth now. We've got a place in Greece, in Kefalonia, and Sue had taken the car into the capital, Argostoli. She had to go to the bank and different stuff. And I said, well, I'll go and pay that bill at the plumber's in the next village. And I said, I'll use PJ's moped, little moped. And there was a bit of a blackout. You get it all the time on the islands, you know, there's suddenly no electricity for about 10, 15 minutes. And at that time, he'd gone off and his helmet and stuff was down in the cellar downstairs. I thought, well, I'm not going to go down there in the cellar. I've never, ever fallen off a bike, you know, ever.
Yeah.
So I don't need the helmet. I'll be fine. I take it. I went and paid the bill. Luckily for them, I'd paid the bill. I was on my way back. On my way back, and there's a very sharp right and left over a little bridge. And now I was coming down the hill, no traffic around, nothing. And I thought, you know, I remember going to school on my bike, you know, you do that down the road, just lean it and lean it and lean it. And I thought, I'll come into the bend, I'll lean it round the bend rather than turn it like you do on your bike, forgetting it's a moped that's got a flat bed at the bottom. I went round the corner, it hit the thing and it just shot off and I hit the floor and I've never heard a noise like it. The bang as my head hit the floor, I thought, I've gone. It was instant, I thought, I'm dead. And I skidded across the floor, it scraped all down my face. Right down, and I don't know if I was knocked out or not. I don't think I was. I seemed to have got straight up.
Yeah.
And I sort of limped straight away. Ow, 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 what's that? The thing's still still live.
Yeah.
You know? And I picked it up, and this woman stopped and she said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yes." I've got blood coming down my face, my elbow, my head. Everything. So I picked it up, moved it out of her way, and she drove off. I thought, thank you very much. Luckily, as I leaned it against the wall, this guy come in, a big Mercedes guy, and he said, "Ah, mate, what's happened? What's happened? Are you off your bike?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't." He said, "I'll take you to the doctors. It's on down there." And he was brilliant, lovely guy. He took me to the doctors, and they sorted me out, put a stitch in my elbow. And then I told Phil Dale, my manager. And he said, "Right, okay, don't worry about it." Next, I see on Reuters they've got Paul Chuckle came off his Harley Davidson on a Greek island because he swerved to miss a load of sheep crossing the road. And then a coach load of tourists stopped and shouted, to you, to me, to you. Can't believe it. Unbelievable. But there you are. So I've now put the story straight.
Oh, that's good. Well, it's good to exclusive to find out that wasn't true. It was a shame. But was that... Is that because that was the story that the tourists had been quoting your catphrase.
So many people said to me afterwards, say, did they really say to you, to me, and you were on the floor injured? No. No.
But did you find, because I was watching, I've got two young kids, and you're watching something like Mr. Tumble, and you think that guy, you know, he's had a very successful career as a children's entertainer, but can he ever go anywhere, like if he has his own kids? I don't know if he's got kids, but he went, were you able to have any kind of life outside of the Chuckle Brothers in terms of that? If people saw you, weren't they expecting you to be on? And no. If kids saw you at a place where you were with your kids, they would...
Yeah.
Be excited, presumably.
Yeah, and in the early days, I tried to keep away from a lot of people because you were constant. There was no telephones, which was probably a good thing. You know, they couldn't. Nowadays, everybody's, can we have a selfie? Oh, can I have a selfie? Can I have a, because everybody's got a phone in the pocket, haven't they, with a camera on it. But in the early days, it was all autographs. You know, can I have an autograph, which took up more time.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing that. So I used to try and keep out the way a lot. Nowadays, I don't care.
No.
I really like it now, if you want to fall to anybody.
But it's, you know, when you've created something that successful, and again, it's the look. And so what was the look just there? When I sort of picture you both having moustaches when you're 6 years old. That's why I really want to be the case. But there must have been a moment where you decided we're going to go for the moustaches, we're going to go for the... Because it was even more extreme, the original Chuckle haircut.
Yeah.
It was,
I was seven, actually, when I got the moustache. No, I actually grew... First moustache I grew, I was 23.
Right.
I was very late in life growing the whiskers. And I kept it. Barry, about 2 or 3 years after me, he grew a moustache.
Right.
As well. We had curly perms in the 70s. Still with the long mullet at the back, the curly mullet at the back. And... Yeah, things evolve. I'm actually working with Stu Francis in pantomime, and I liked the way he put mousse in his hair and it was done.
Yeah.
It was all sticking up, and I thought, that's much easier than having a curly perm, that. So I had my hair cut, and I did the same thing, and I kept it ever since.
Yeah. And but it's finding the gimmick, it's finding the look, and you've found the look.
But we didn't do it purposely. It just happened. It's like to me, to you.
Yeah.
You know, we always did that. We, if we went into a flat for the summer season and we'd walk in, to me, not to you, but to me, I would walk in and I would just sit there and say, this is fine, put the telly on. You know, Barry, no. Barry's like that fence sheer, we would call it.
Oh, yeah.
He liked to move everything out. Set here would be better over here than that chair here, and we could have the table here. No, it's fine. No. Okay, where do you want it? And they would say, put this here, right? And we'd go, to me, to you, to me, to you, and move it. And it was just a natural thing we always did.
Yeah.
And then the first series of the, I think probably episode two, we had to move something. And we did, to me, to you, to me, to you, moved it. Next day, going into the circus, we were at the circus at Blackpool.
Right.
Not old Charlie then, no, it was years later. We were doing the circus at Blackpool, and we were filming in the morning in Manchester, travelling to Blackpool and doing 2:15 matinee and a 7:15 evening show every day. It was absolute killer.
Yeah.
But we were walking into the theatre and we had some building guys on the side shouted, to you, to me, to you. We went, what? We didn't understand why they were saying it. And we hadn't realised we'd done it on the show.
Right.
You know, because we just did it naturally, to me, to you, to put it there. And it's just gone on from there. And I think most people in the country know it now and say it.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to say, well, we move furniture and we go, to you, to me, to you. And I said, well, yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah.
it's funny how things catch on like that, isn't it?
But it's amazing that that's, you know, and then that, I mean, but I think a lot of catchphrases start in that way that you don't even, you know. Yeah. Was it moon on a stick, which was one of our catchphrases for Lee and Herring. We just would say that to each other for ages. I think we didn't use it for ages in this sketch. We just used to say it all the time to each other. And I think one day we went, should we try and turn that into a thing? And it sort of became a thing. So it's sort of, it is interesting that it just comes up as a silly thing
exactly.
to say.
Exactly. We never
tried. You're amusing yourself and you don't even think of going, oh, we'll put that
you know, because we obviously thought of, because Fandabidozi was around in those days and all that. And we thought, we've got to have something like that. So we're going, silly you, silly me. And that stuff, that never caught on.
No.
You know, nothing. Oh dear, did a bit.
Yeah.
But the main one was always, say, which we didn't even think about, to you, to me.
Yeah. It's because, I mean, it's a but it's also funny. It's not just a catchphrase. It's funny that it's always, you moving in the same direction? Because it's to me, to you. It's not to me, to me. It's to me, to you. So it's... Well, so you're both moving the thing in the same direction.
Exactly.
Well, so it's a joke, which is quite unusual for a catchphrase. It is actually
Well, we did write a few of the episodes ourselves. One that I wrote myself was a chimney one, chimney sweeps. And I wrote into that, and pushing the thing up the chimney. And I'm going, to you, to me, to you, to me. And I said, what are you doing? He said, to you, to me. No, no, you can't do that on a job like this. It's got to be to you, and further up the chimney. So we're going to you, and further up the chimney. You know, there's lots of stuff you can do with it. I mean, we had some great fun with it.
And you ended up doing you worked with Tinchy Strider doing that song.
Well, we did, yeah. Well, we did Keith Lemon's show.
Right.
You know, Celebrity
Juice. Yeah.
And we were in two... There was four aside in two teams.
Yeah.
We were the bang... Am I allowed to say bastards? No.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we were. That's what we were. We were the bang bastards.
Okay.
Our team. And Tinchy was on the team. And we were sitting in the green room. And I was sitting next to Tinchy and we were talking. We got on like wildfire. We really got on well. And end of the... We had selfies and things, you know, on the settee. And exchanged numbers. There was nothing gay about it. No, but we got on really great.
Yeah.
And
no one thought there was until that, right? Another exclusive.
I'm not going to carry on with that. No. So I put on Twitter and Instagram, I put the pictures of us and chatting. And everybody was coming on saying, when's the collab coming? You know, when's the song coming out? When are you going to do it? So I phoned him and I said, I'm getting all this stuff here about the collab. He said, I'm getting the same on my feeds. He said, I tell you what, why don't you come down to this? I've got a studio in North London. Come down, we'll record something, about 6-7 seconds. We'll put it on Instagram and, you know, and it was just for a laugh. So here it is. So we said, oh, fine. So we went down. He picked us up at the King's Cross and we went to his studio. And it was a lovely little studio. It did smell a bit. Not nastily, you know, but depends what you smoke, I suppose. But I love a scotch.
Yeah.
Not that this is apple juice.
You wouldn't have a pint of scotch,
of course,
would you?
Wouldn't, no.
Well, no one would do that.
So we get in there and we've got no script to this thing, but Dirty David, David, who is a producer.
Okay.
He's written the music for it. Do-dip, diddle-do-dip, do-dip, do-dip, diddle-do-dip. And it goes to walk in, it's playing. And I said, that sounds good, catchy, what's that? He said, I've written that for you. He said, I've got it there for you. And, all right. So we're having a chat and we've got a bottle of scotch there and for me and David. And everybody else has got these flute things. I don't know what they were. But Tinchy goes in the corner with cans on his... doing this in the corner, and I said, what's he doing? He said, he's doing the first couple of lines. I said, what? He said, well, he'll tell you in a minute. So then he takes the cans off, he comes over, your turn. We said, what? He said, well, I've just said, hello, you must be the Chuckle Brothers. I said, your hand? He said, will you answer me? So, all right. So me and Barry went over and we was whatever it was. And then he went and did it. It went on like that. And we just kept going. We thought, this is much longer than... And he said, yeah, but it sounds good, doesn't it? You know, we'll try and put more down. So anyway, we'd finished. It did sound all right. It wasn't brilliant, but it sounded all right. And then Jamal Edwards, poor Jamal, great guy.
Wow.
Who's just passed away.
Yeah.
He got hold of it because Tinchy was a friend of his. And he came on and said, "Would you mind coming back down to London and recording it on tape?"
Right.
And we'll put it out as a song. We said, "Well, it was only a mess about." And they said, "Yeah, but it's a bit of fun. Would you do it for the Afro-Caribbean Leukemia Society?" And they said, "Oh, yeah, no problem whatsoever." So we went back down and Jamal was there and we did the video, we did the whole thing. And then they let it out for charity and it had over 3 million downloads and was number one in the hip-hop charts for 2 weeks. Well, it was brilliant. Made a lot of money for the charity.
Yeah, it's and, fantastic.
And we it started us with a new career.
Yes.
Because we then started going to clubs and doing the song and doing meet and greets and stuff.
Yeah.
Killed Tingy's career too.
It was much more...
You've got the grime artists and the Chuckle Brothers, you know.
It was much more a risk for him, but that's why, you know, that's why entertainment's an amazing thing and it's great when people, you know, when the generations meet and when unexpected people meet and get on in that way. And it's very, you know, it's a catchy song and it's very funny as well. So it's great that
you,
it did so well.
To me.
but you know, it's so...
Having said that, I've got a new tune coming out.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's house music.
Yeah.
Called The Only Way Is To Me To You. I don't know why we used that, as but there you go. Yes, that's coming out. That's really good. I can play it for you. No, I won't play it for you.
We'll find it. Well, you know, we'll get on to your new career a little bit later, maybe. But yeah, it's. I was just watching in the dressing room just before we with you and I mean, you're a very good actor, and it's both of you are fantastic actors. And shortly before Barry died, you did a short film together about Joseph Grimaldi. Joe Grimaldi.
Oh, Grimaldi. Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah.
Which is really worth seeing, an award-winning, and Barry won awards for it, and it's...
Yeah, I mean, we were the tops, obviously. No, but Barry played Grimaldi,
yeah.
The name was, the old Grimaldi. He did it really well.
Yeah.
But it went on festivals all over the world, and he got Best Supporting Actor in Moscow. And we thought... Moscow, supporting actor. He's playing Grimaldi, who's the top. But there you go. But it was brilliant to see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've seen it many times on talking pictures, you know, on the telly. It's good, still good, but it doesn't look as good as it did on the big screen, seeing them on the silver screen.
No, but it's beautiful. Yeah. Also because, you know, it's quite rare, I think, when comedians are portrayed on film, they often have actors... who aren't comedians playing, like stand-up. You see stand-ups and it's never quite right.
Yeah.
But the routines in it are beautiful and you both are, you know, they're very, very funny routines of Grimaldi presumably recreating. I mean, to what extent is it guesswork with that? Or is there like...
No, we looked back in the archives of him. Grimaldi was the first funny clown.
Yeah.
You know, in Europe, I think he was Italian, but he was the first clown... he went down in history. He was a funny guy, and he had, which was me playing the part, a partner, not his brother, a partner.
Yeah.
And it was really sad. Looking back at it, when I watch it now, it's very sad because the last scene, I carry him on stage, put him down and say goodbye and walk off, and he dies on stage. So... It is really sad for me watching it now.
Yeah, and Barry didn't... Is it true he didn't let you know that he was ill because he wanted to keep working?
Exactly. He wanted to keep working. And he knew if I knew that he'd got cancer, bone cancer, I would say, and our manager would have done the same, they would have said, get yourself sorted, you know, get in, have chemo, do all the bit and whatever. But he didn't want that. He'd always said, right from a middle age... that if he ever got cancer, he wouldn't have chemotherapy. He'd seen so many people lose their hair, being sick and poorly. He'd just let it go. And I used to argue with him, say, well, that's stupid, that. Life is worth living, you know.
Yeah.
I love life. I enjoy every minute of life. And even if it meant you going through sickness and pain, if it could keep you alive, do it. But he always just said he wouldn't. And obviously, he lived up to it because he didn't tell us until he couldn't walk. I went round to, we were going down to do a thing for Sports Relief, a sketch with Chris Kamara, and taxi picked me up, went to his house to pick him up, and he struggled to get out of the house. I looked, you know, really, you know, what are you doing? He's struggling to lift his feet to get over the doorstep to come out to the car. And sorry about this. I know it's really sad. It's sad for me. He struggled to get to the car, and we talked all the way to the station. And I said, Are you sure you want to do this? You know, we can always ring up and say we can't do it. Well, we can't let him down, he's saying, you know. It's, and I said, yeah, but it's going to look bad. You're trying to walk in looking like that. You know, they're all going to say, what's wrong? What have you? What is wrong? And that's when he told me what he'd got. And I said, look, I've got to phone Phil, tell him that we can't do it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he went home. And the next day I get a phone call from his wife, Anne, who says that he can't get out of bed. He'd lost the use of his legs totally. And that was awful, and it just went from there.
Yeah.
About 8 weeks later, he'd gone.
I mean, it's, you know, it's so hard to understand how it would hit you, because obviously it's not just your... I mean, it's your brother, it's your work partner, it's obviously everything. And so for...
Best mate, everything.
Yeah, so it's for you, it's such a blow, and such a, you know, such a... To even try and come back from that at all is amazing.
It was.
Yeah.
But when he was ill, obviously, I was going to see him and what have you. And, you know, he said, you must carry on the business. You know, don't pack it in. I said, yeah, but, you know, you were half of me.
Yeah.
You know, I'll only be half what I was, you know, without you. And he said, yeah, you'll find something. You know, you just keep going, just keep doing something. And a few days after that, we were asked to do the a gig in Cardiff club, nightclub. And people had said for a long time, why don't you do DJ stuff? You know, people will love it, you know, if you were up there playing the music. And Barry never wanted to. He wasn't a party animal like me. And they came in and said, well, Barry can't do it. He's not well. And I asked Barry if he minded if I did it myself, doing the DJ thing. And he said, no, you crack on, do it, you know. And that wasn't till the October, that gig. And he passed away in August. But I went in and did it. And it was brilliant. And, yeah. And loads more clubs came in for me. And that started that. Then I did pantomime at somewhere. I can't remember where it is. But I did pantomime that year on my own for the first time. I'd never been on stage on my own, never. Except for DJing, different thing. And I remember standing in the wings, waiting for my entrance, and the music playing, Chuckle Vision playing. And Barry is always at the other side, and we come on opposites and turn and walk down the front, and he wasn't there. But I could swear I could see him to the side of the stage.
Right.
And, you know, he's nodding and winking at me and give me confidence to walk on stage.
Yeah.
The audience lifted me beautifully as I walked on.
Well, I mean, I think there's so much love for that act, and I think it's so wonderful that you had that chance for him to say, I want you to carry on.
Yeah, that was lovely.
And, you know, and I think it's... And also, you have to carry on. You know, that's... You've had this long career, such a long career, just to sort of end it. And it's so amazing you've found this, you know, something that works, that's different, but still the same, you know. So it's...
Yeah. And I still do TV. I still do, you know... Doctors.
Yeah, doctors.
But then last year I did Madame Blanc Mysteries.
Yep. Is Robin Asquith in that? Was that the
Robin was in it, yeah. Sally Lindsay.
Yeah.
She wrote it, and Sue Vincent.
And Marigold Hotel, you think you did that thing?
In India, that was really good. I've got some good mates from that. Duncan Bannatyne, Henry Blofeld, big mates now.
Yeah.
You know, we had a great time.
And Pointless? So how'd you get on in Pointless? Have you done it a few times, right?
Is he trying to embarrass me? Yeah, I've done it a few times. We got to the final once.
Right.
We were out first round once.
Yeah.
Second round once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like this is the same for me. I've done everything. Out first, out second, out third, out fourth. Won it.
You won it.
We won it. The last time, me and Les Dennis.
Can we change the subject?
what about Celebrity Mastermind? How did you get on Celebrity Mastermind?
Mastermind? Hey, hey. Me, Paul Chuckle, Celebrity Mastermind. I came last. No, but it wasn't bad. I got 10 points And the game before, that they've called on that before, 4 points won it.
What?
Mind you, Bez was one of the characters in that. So, yeah, I couldn't believe it. I got 10 points and I came last. 13 won it, 12 was second, 11 was third.
Oh, that's
was fourth. Cool. Never mind.
I got 34 points and didn't win. So I'm not bitter about it.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
This is something. Is this true that the theme, you'd mentioned the Chuckle Brothers theme tune, which is an amazing piece of music that does not leave your brain once you've thought of it?
No, Dave Cook, brilliant.
Incredible stuff. Did it, a girl in a coma get played the Chuckle Brothers theme tune? Have you heard this story?
No. Oh, yes, the girl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what a story that was.
Yeah.
We were working Basingstoke and we got a message round that could this woman and her daughter come round to meet us because she'd been in a coma and now she's well again, you know, and they're so happy, but she's a big fan. Would you mind meeting her? I said, oh, not at all, bring her round. So they came round and she told us a story. I was in floods of tears. This little girl was really seriously ill and she'd been in a coma for a week. And on the Friday, they called her, the mother, in and said, if she doesn't come out of the coma by Monday morning, we're going to have to turn the machines off because, you know, there's no activity, nothing. And she was in tears saying, well, what can I do? And they said, well, talk to her, you know, talk to her about things she likes and what have you. And she suddenly thought, Chuckle Vision, she absolutely adored Chuckle Vision. She lived Chuckle Vision all the time. She said, I'll go home. And she recorded on a little tape recorder, Chuckle Vision, Chuckle Trip, the whole thing over and over again. And she put it at the side of her bed and played it. And it was on for about 2 minutes. And her eyes opened, so she smiled and said, is it on, Mummy? tears in my eyes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It brought around. Yeah. You know, otherwise she'd have had the machine turned off and she was dead. So, you know, we'd actually saved the little girl's life.
It's amazing.
It was real. Tears were running down my face when she was telling us the story. And what a lovely little girl with big smiles she had, you know, and everything. Oh.
Well, that's amazing. And also, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about this. But there's a picture of you and Barry that has my favourite optical illusion that you've ever... Are you aware of the photo I'm talking
Leeds,
about? If the Chuckle Brothers did nothing else...
No, Prism Nightclub Leeds. Yes, yeah.
Are you aware?
What a fabulous cocktail that was, wasn't it?
Have you seen this picture? There's a very pretty girl and the Chuckle Brothers either side and just the way...
She's holding...
she's got a glass. Just the way her arm is... got a bit of hair across the top, so
I'm interested to see how you're going to explain this.
I thought you'd all remember it. Look, I'll put it up with the podcast.
Yeah, get it.
I've got it on my phone.
Oh yeah.
So it just looks like Barry's got an enormous penis pointing up, like very big. Oh, and I like to think that was what he had. Don't spoil the illusion.
No, it was a cocktail.
it was a glass with a cock, and it was very, very nice. So if the Chuckle Brothers had done nothing else, that would be enough for me. But they did much, much more. It was a real pleasure, I have to say, going back and watching that stuff again. And you did a show on Channel 5 briefly, didn't you?
Yeah.
Just before Barry died.
Before he died.
But you got plans to bring the Chuckle Brothers back in cartoon form?
We are. Actually, it's animation, Chuckle Vision. Well, it's going to be called Chuckle's World.
Right.
BBC owned Chuckle Vision.
Right.
And we're not allowed to use it, but yeah, you're going to do Chuckle's World. It's going to be exactly the same, doing the same stuff that me and Barry did, but it's a cartoon version. Hopefully it does as well as Mr. Bean did.
Yeah.
With that.
Well, half of Mr. Bean would do, wouldn't it?
Yeah. A quarter will do me, I'll tell you in a minute.
So that's amazing. And you're DJing, you're in Skegness last night?
I am, yes. I was Butlin's Weekender, 90s Weekender, and I was... Because I DJ stuff now, I'm... I love house music and I just play it wildly, even at home I do. And I did all the 90s stuff last night and I loved it again. Yeah. The week before I was at Minehead doing a noughties week. Not noughties, you know. Butlins has always been a noughties weekend, hasn't it, really? Yeah, and playing all the 2000s music. And I love it. Absolutely love it. I do clubs as well.
And I saw you recently. My wife had been nominated for an award at the Writers Guild Award, and you were presenting some awards there. And it was amazing to see the reaction to you, because it was a room full of quite highbrow, intellectual people who went nuts. Yeah.
They did. Yeah, they were really good.
And everyone was taking selfies and putting them all over Twitter the next day. Yeah. Is that the reaction you get everywhere? It is more or less
until tonight.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, and Gail Renard is down here.
Yeah.
It was one of the chiefs of the Writers Guild. I don't know if you know the name, but do you remember John Lennon and Yoko Ono having the sleeping?
Yeah.
In the bedding?
I do.
And there was a young 16-year-old girl that was doing the mediation between the press and everything for the whole week.
Right.
That's Gail Renard. Wow. She's down there. You should have her one night.
Okay.
I don't mean she'd have her
on
one
the show.
Night. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yes. You should get her on the show for definite. She's brilliant.
Sounds amazing. Yes, definitely. And you're writing a second. You've written one book about your life, and you're up to the Chuckle Brothers, and you're writing.
I have, yeah. I wrote 50 Years of To Me To You.
Yeah.
Which has been out about 6-7 years now. It's sold about 220 copies.
That's good. So far.
Yeah, it's doing. It's up in the charts. It's heading there. But that finished, the story finished in 1987 when Chuckle Vision started.
Yeah.
So I'm writing the new book now from Chuckle Vision years, from 87 till now.
Cool.
I've done a couple of things.
It's amazing to see, it's amazing that I just love a career that man and boy, and that keeps going, and I think that as a comedian, that's all I aspire to is... Still, and you're incredibly. Can you mind me saying, you're nearly 75 years old.
I am,
and you do not look 75 years old. DJing and staying up late and drinking pints of whiskey.
Me, you know that.
I do. I'll give it a go. I'm going to take it where you can get it at my age. But it's inspirational and it's amazing. And you've been through lots of things in your life, and I think losing your brother and your double act partner in that way is such a huge blow.
Yeah.
So for you to still be pushing on and still doing all of this stuff is incredible. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Absolute inspiration and legend. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Paul Chuckle.
Thank you. We can go. He's only telling me to go.
You can stay if you want. We'll be back next week with another guest. You have been listening to Rahalastapaa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Paul Chuckle. Thank you very much to Scant Regard for providing this theme tune. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, also to Chris Evans, not that one, and all the team at Go Faster Stripe. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. It's lovely to be back. Thank you to everyone at Acast. You're all lovely too. I also need to thank some of the people who gave money to the Kickstarter campaign. They are Sam Pickford, Bettina Saunders, Neil Porter, James Spooner, Neil Smith, Dominic Plagic, Eve Black, Lozzie Lozzie Loz Pops, Samuel Galton, Sue Elliott, The Red Clothing Company, I love red clothes, Peter Sisson, Erga Ajesu, sorry if I got that wrong, Julie Bernstein, Name Your Keyring, they were well named, Craig Whiten, Bruce Leckenby, Bill and Dinah Lord, UK Gnome, Baz Slater, Andrew Patterson, Samuel Findlay, Matthew Yeo, Lindsay B, Noel McNulty, Simon Buckmaster, Catherine Compton, Yannick, Tom Anderson, Ryan Lynch, Chris Heathcote, Catherine Haig, Mark Wellman, Ian E. Barkley, Soraya Justin. Don't worry, there'll be loads more of those at the end of every episode for the rest of the series. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Head to GoFasterStripe.com to download my live shows and also buy copies of my beautiful book. Support Go Faster Stripe if you can. They've got a monthly membership thing as well. It's a wonderful, wonderful organization. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.